Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Off The Beat and Track Podcast live show. My name's Stu Whiffin, and joining me tonight is Cy Brett. Cy, Steve, and Sean. There's lots of duplicate names on here, which is going to make it very very confusing. But there's an array of different accents that you're going to get, so it's not going to be too difficult to sort of differentiate between who's speaking. And tonight we've decided for our little Zoom hangout. And what I should say as well is, if Patreons are listening to this first, we know that there's lots of you out there. And what, as much as it's lovely that the same faces always make the effort to come along to these, we'd love to have more of you come and get involved in these, because I just always worry that people think it's going to be this sort of snobby thing, and it's not. It's really not. And I know I say this at the beginning of most episodes, but it's a lovely bunch of people, and it isn't a judgy thing. So you're going to hear that on today's episode. So hopefully we'll see a few more of you at the next one. We're talking albums today. Essential albums is essentially what we're going to be talking about. And I've kind of got a few questions, rather than just going straight into essential albums. And if you've not listened to one of these live shows before, I do generally sort of put them out into the sort of wider area than just the Patreon a few months after. But what we do is, with the guests here, we'll chat through some questions, and everybody kind of sort of put their answers together, and we'll have a little natter, and that's what you're about to get right now. So I thought I would start this discussion about albums by saying, what was the first album you remember hearing? Not owning, but hearing. So what was your folks playing at home or wherever you was living? What was the sort of first album that perhaps you even sort of picked up the sleeve when you was, you know, rooting? And I'm looking in here, and I guess most of us are at an age that it was probably vinyl that we would have been looking at through our parents' collection. And so I'll start on the centre of my screen with Steve Priest. Steve, what can you remember sort of was the first sort of album that you may have sort of picked up from the parents' collection, if they had a record collection?
They had one, but it was pretty woeful, to be honest. Like, neither of my folks were that into music. I mean, my dad used to listen to, like, the radio, Capital Gold, or whatever kind of 50s and 60s station was on. My mum was never sort of that interested. I mean, the only thing I can remember my dad had, because he was from Birmingham, he obviously had the first Black Sabbath album. So he probably did play that to me at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were never that bothered about music at all, really. It wasn't until I started, you know, getting a bit older and hanging out with like different people that you know, you started developing my own music taste.
Okay. We'll get on to that with the next question, which is going to be, so get your thinking caps on for this as well. I'm going to ask you what the first album was that you bought. Simon Newby, growing up at home, was there records on? If so, what was the album that might have drawn you to the collection?
There were. My dad had a small vinyl collection, and he also had his 8-track and all that as well, which were never allowed anywhere near without supervision. his big off the floor Wharfdales that are still going.
Lovely.
And all that sort of, yeah. I'm trying to think which one it'd be, because he had the usual sort of Led Zepp, Pink Floyd. It was all sort of that classic rock. It was probably some one of the Deep Purple albums, something like that.
Okay.
I don't know whichever one had Lights of Smoke on the Water and Highway Star. I can't remember which one it's called.
Yeah.
And but I do remember him playing those loud.
What's interesting for me, because I think probably the first albums I would listen to, I don't know, because I would be drawn to the sleeves that looked interesting. I remember my parents had Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, and it was a double vinyl, a gatefold on yellow vinyl. And the cover of it's amazing. And obviously you pull out yellow vinyl, it's like, oh my God. But I don't ever remember playing that. It's only much later that I've become familiar with, like, you know, how good a record that is. I remember, again, Atlantic Crossing by Rod Stewart, seeing that, and he's got them big kind of psychedelic flares on. I mean, someone's just holding up the sleeve to...
It's going to be Cy Lovell. He's got every album known to man within arm's reach.
And it's fantastic. Is it the yellow vinyl? Yes, it is. Look at that. I mean, as a young lad, I mean, that's the stuff of dreams, isn't it?
Well, the flip side is because he had all this sort of classic rock stuff, and they all had distinctive covers, and they all stood out. The one that stood out, but I don't think I've ever actually listened to as an album, was the White Album.
Oh, really?
Because amongst everything else, that just stood out.
Yeah.
But I don't remember ever listening to it.
Wow. That's the thing. I think I missed out on some great records, but. You know, to throw my two penneth in there, the first one that would listen to on all the time was that Silver Motown Chartbusters compilation, like that everybody seemed to have, and just absolutely chocker. I think kicks off with Smokey's on there twice with Tears of a Clown and Tracks of My Tears, and I think the album kicks off with Tears of a Clown. Oh, bloody hell, what a way to start a record. Okay, Brett Carter.
That's a good one. I remember a sort of, you know, in the back of the car, dad's playing Driving. It is always early Dire Straits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the one that I remember, sort of, that's an album, was the War of the Worlds album. And... Sure. The cover and everything, and we was as kids, me and my little brother were mesmerized by this thing.
Yeah.
And I played it to my kids a few years ago, and they were like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's a bad word you could say about that.
Terrifying as well.
Absolutely. I mean, when Ula comes in, you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah, that was in everybody's parents' record collection, I think.
Standard.
And I remember the being around my uncle's for the first time hearing that. It was a big family party, and he had this really cool sort of hi-fi in like their dining room. And I remember just going in there on my own and him putting it on for me and sitting there with headphones. And I think, like, I must have just come out of that room straight into, like, my parents' car and was going home, and probably just was like, I think I need some counselling, Mum. Like, I don't know what
watching the skies, yeah.
Absolutely. Smashed my brain to pieces. I don't know what just happened. Yeah, it's a great chat. Sean, what was the first album you remember hearing at home, mate?
I think it's probably going to be from In My Dad's Car, so cassettes. And going back to what you're saying about being drawn to album covers, I had a Beautiful South album, which is the cover had, it was like, a turtle with a face on the back of it. So those are turtles. I can't remember what the album was called.
Yeah.
But it was that one and Bad Michael Jackson. They were the two cassettes. I can still see him just in his car, just like on the seat or on the in the little tape deck. But yeah, those are the two that I can remember the most.
Fantastic. And what's interesting there is, Sean, you've just made the rest of us feel really old. They were in your dad's collection. They were in my collection.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
we'll move along to Stephen. What was yours, mate?
Well, it's not as an album, Simon and Garfunkel's Greatest Hits. Remember, it was an 8-track stereo in the car, and that was, of the choices that were available, was the thing that I would actively want to listen to, because the other choices were loads of sort of pipe drum bands and sort of things like that. That's what my dad was listening to, and it's like, no, that's not for me. And there was one other one that was a compilation 8-track. Don't know what it was called, but there was two tracks on it. The first one in side one of the thing was Snoopy versus the Red Baron, the Royal Guardsman, and I loved that song. But to hear it again, I had to listen to the last song in track four, which was Me and Mrs. Jones by whoever it was, and I hated that. So you had the joy of listening to one, the hate of listening to the other, just to get that going back in the journey. So it was generally Simon and Garfunkel, Greatest Hits was the one that we choose to listen to, because we liked every song on it.
And there's some solid gold on that record as well. There's they're not shy of a hit. What a band. So Lovell, I think you're the last one to put your two penny in on this one.
Weirdly, it's two albums. One of them I was listening to at the weekend.
Okay, The Move. Nice.
And it's this actual album. It's the one that I listened to as a kid. I've still got it. Still listen to it, and I love. But I only ever listened to the A side. But I absolutely love it. But it was that and Imagine, John Lennon. That was the two what I remember growing up to, and my mum having on a record player. It was one of those cool ones that I had six as well. So,
oh, lovely.
Fucking love one of them now.
Am I right in saying that Roy Wood was in The Move, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He was nuts, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I think he still is.
But he never did drugs or drank.
Really?
Yeah, he's like really straight, because like Wizard were nuts, Rory Wood was nuts. They were quite a sort of psychedelic band.
Yeah.
But no, apparently he's like straight, pure as a driven snow, like me too.
Absolutely. Well, let's stay with you, Zamo, and we'll ask you for the first album that you remember buying. That was the first album that you owned.
Oh, the first album I bought. I remember the first album I got. It was the same as yours, Stu.
Yep. It can be, that's what I meant, the one you owned first. Whether you
first
it.
One, it was the first, I got the first Now album.
Yeah.
And I got the Hits. I think it was Hits 1. It must have been at the same time.
It was, yeah. It came out just after.
Yeah. And I got both of those. That's the first two albums I remember owning when I was, what was it, 83, 84, weren't they?
83.
So I was 10, was it? I was 9,
yeah.
And actually, I listened to that at the weekend as well.
Oh, both fantastic.
And they're cracking.
Like, I loved a compilation as a kid. And yeah, and what does that start with? It's Phil Collins, isn't it? You can't
Phil Collins,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I think it's Please, Please Tell Me Now, then maybe Double Dutch. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Rocksteady Crew's on there. Kajagoogoo's on there twice. They're on there with Too Shy and the post Limahl track, which was called Big Apple, the Nick Beggs one.
Life in the Big Apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, this ain't it. Yeah, this is it, Stu.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's the first record I ever got. And I can see it. It's literally just to my left here.
Yeah, that was my, same as me. First one I ever got.
Absolutely. Tracy Ullman's version of They Don't Know, which is a fucking perfect pop record, the Kirsty MacColl tune. But I loved the stuff that Tracy Ullman was doing then as well. I think Stiff were just putting some fantastic stuff out at that point and just really sort of pushing what they could do. And yeah, Tracy Ullman, They Don't Know. Oh, what a song. Okay. Steve Priest, what was the first album you owned?
It was Eva. I was just literally just Googling it because I couldn't remember when it came out. It was Eva, Brothers in Arms, Dire Straits, or it was Silk and Steel by Five Star.
Love it.
It was either one of them two on cassette.
It's fantastic that you, at them ages, your taste is just a fucking pinball machine, isn't it? You have not drilled down to what you're into there. Yeah,
you don't care, do you?
Dire Straits or Romford's Finest. I love that.
You know, it's changed slightly since then.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more avant-garde now, but...
Firefly still had a couple of bangers, mate. I'll tell you,
little bangers.
You listen to Can't Wait Another Minute. Considering where R&B went in like the kind of late 80s with the Teddy Riley stuff, they were like kind of 5 years before that, and they had some fantastic... I don't know who produced Five Star, but yeah, they did have some cracking little pop gems, they did. And I did have Doris from Five Star on, and she was really nice. And if I remember rightly, chose some great records as well. But we was always like, well, jealous of Five Star because they live where we live. It was just like, every now and again, if you went to Romford, like you'd see this sports go-kart, like, go park this sports car, and it had like a private number plate. That's one of Five Star. Jesus Christ,
it's
amazing.
I only found out that they were English about, I think it was during lockdown, we listened to them, and my wife made a comment, and I said, I thought they were American. And yeah. I genuinely never knew till about 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Essex, and you've got the age-old classic on Live and Kicking, where the geezer ran up and asked him a question. This is so Five Star, why are you such a load of fucking shit?
Up there with Matt Bianco as well. Fantastic. Love it. Okay, Sean, first album you owned?
The first album I can remember buying with my own money, I'm not that I can actually remember, is Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers.
Oh, that's a good place to start, brother.
Yeah.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of that. But the first one I remember owning is probably either What's the Story, Morning Glory or Spice Girls. So, you win some, you lose some.
It's so strange that the Spice Girls thing. It's I recorded with an artist called Jelani Blackman a couple of days ago for this. And he, you know, he was like, yeah, well, it, you know, my cool answer is this, but I think my honest answer would be the Spice Girls. And I mean, I don't think they were very good. Like, I don't think they and I say that, the phenomena around it, I thought was really good, you know, and it was just, you know, it was a huge global thing, you know, the Spice Girls, but I just didn't think they had very good songs. That was what it comes down to. I think when you look at like, lots of other kind of, sort of, you know, manufactured groups. A lot of them have really good songs that if you look at Girls Aloud, like, they've got loads of pop songs that still sound really fucking good today. Like, things like The Promise and Biology, they're really well-crafted pop songs. I don't get that with Mama and Spice Up Your Life, but, you know, maybe that's just because I suppose at that point I was probably more interested in what Oasis were putting out than what the Spice Girls were putting out, But yeah, I think like it's really weird whenever people say the Spice Girls, they always sort of say it a bit like and Spice Girls, but biggest band on the planet at that point, you know, you couldn't escape them. And when Melanie C come on the podcast in lockdown, she was an absolute fucking delight. She was so nice and was like a real good chat. Fucking great taste. I remember having a big old chat about Kate Bush with her. And okay, Stephen, what have you got for me, mate? First album you remember owning?
Well, I suppose the first one I remember sort of getting and buying would be Absolutely Madness.
Oh, wow.
But I remember having albums before that. Two that I can remember are The Best of the Wombles and The Muppet Show. So they're the vinyl that I had before Madness. But Madness was the first one I can remember actively choosing.
Oh, phenomenal.
Snap. Absolutely snap. That was the first one for me as well. And studying that cover and going, where is Cairo East Tube Station? I can't see it on the map. fantastic.
Being a shout for my essential album, but it's not in the ones that I'm going to mention for that, but it was one of the ones that's on the list. Yeah. And only a couple of weeks to go for another new Madness album.
Yes. You
know, I've already got an order.
With a rubbish title. It's one of the worst titles ever. It's in two parts. It should be The Theatre of the Absurds presents C'est La Vie. The Theatre of the Absurds, all right. C'est La Vie would be all right. But they've clashed the two together. That's the name of the album.
I did get a little phone call from Cunt the day before yesterday, I think, saying he's got a spare ticket for their launch at Coco, was it, I believe?
Yeah, that was last week.
Was it last week? Sure it wasn't this week?
I might be wrong.
So yeah. It was a few, Bob, and I couldn't get out and get uptown for it, but I think he went along. Yeah. Okay. So yours was the same then, Brett.
I did have a couple of copies of those dodgy Top of the Pops albums kicking around, but that was the one that I was like, I want that album. I got it for my birthday. I was well chuffed.
And there would have been a couple of scantily clad bikini covered women on them Schneid Top of the Pops records.
Oh, yeah. Shit copies of, dodgy remakes.
Yeah. For anyone that's not seen them, they're available in abundance in any charity shop of your choice. Just go in there, get excited that they've got a load of records to sell, and then just be very disappointed at the fact that all you're going to get is copious amounts of them Top of the Pops covers records and the occasional Richard Clayderman or Nana Mouskouri album in there. So don't get too overexcited. Sinubi, first album you remember owning?
The first one I had, it wasn't the first one I bought, was Now 5.
Okay.
We were given a free copy of that at some local village fete. For some reason, they had a crate of about 100 of them, and they were just giving them out in this little village fete where I come from. And that was the one with like Simple Minds, Don't You Forget About Me. And
wonderful.
I can't remember. That's the one I remember. But the first one I bought was Wham, Make It Big.
Good chap. Have many of you, hands up if you've any of you watched that Wham documentary on Netflix? I wouldn't say I'm the biggest fan of Wham, but I'll tell you what, as far as documentaries go, it's a cracking one. You watched it, Brett, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, again, I wouldn't say I was a massive fan, but all the girls in my class were.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, you sit down and think, that was really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a fantastic watch. Okay, who's left? Have we gone round? I think we have, haven't we? Right, in which case, my next question is, have you got an album that may be seen by others to be uncool, but you don't give a shit because you love it? I mean, Sean, if you want to chime in with your Spice Girls record, now's the time, mate. You might have gone too quick, mate. has anybody got one to hand that they've got? Or Brett, you seem to have it loaded. Go on, what you got?
I was looking at the list of ones I put down. Then I went onto Apple Music today and did the top 25 most played ones. And everybody's got their own this. It's Elvis's Christmas album. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's just Elvis and Christmas. And my brother got it when he was about 6. And I've still got that copy. I mean, that's been in the family for years. It's wonderful. There's a couple of gospel ones, but there's a lot of all this sort of stuff. It's great. I recommend it to anybody.
Oh, mate, the King of Christmas. What more could you want?
Exactly.
Fantastic. Steve Priest, I mean, what have you got in your record collection that others may think is a little bit uncool, but you don't really care? And don't say My Band.
No, it's the Crash Test Dummies first album.
Okay.
If you can get past and, you know, the kind of funny memes and stuff that have been put out about that album is just a fucking classic. It is amazing from start to finish. Go on, mate, sorry.
Is the XTC cover of Peter Pumpkinhead on the album?
No, I don't think so.
Right.
But it's got Afternoons and Coffee Spoons on it. But it's really, it's amazing, I think, anyway. So, but it's well worth a listen to.
I don't think I've ever heard it.
It's brilliant, mate.
It's a cracking album. I'm with you on that, Steve. I love that album.
regularly, at least once a month, I'll listen to it from start to finish. Right. That's very unusual for me. So I'm at the, where I drive around for like work and where I'm at work and stuff, I'll just have things on shuffle. But that is one album that I will sit there and I will play it from start to finish. And then, you know, just sit there and enjoy it.
That is going to be my drive to the toothbrush and back tomorrow night. I'm going to give that a whirl. And because I
let me know, let me know what you think, mate. Let me know what you think. I'm interested.
I'll yeah, and I never had a problem with I thought it was when it first came out.
It's a great song,
interesting single. And I guess when something becomes so big on that, the sort of first time you ever hear of a band, it become almost like a novelty, didn't it? Quite quickly. Because of the nature of the you know, the chorus, and it's a, you know, it's a solid song, isn't it?
Definitely. And,
I will endeavour to check the record. Sinubi, what have you got in your collection that many people may think is uncool, but you don't care?
All of it. I don't know. I mean, give it. I mean, you'll know my taste. It's very middle of the road, very sort of classic rock, yacht rock, and all that. So most of it. Queen greatest hits.
I mean, I would. Did you say Queen or Cream?
Well, either really, to be honest. But Queen.
Yeah,
I think it's just got everything on there you need.
I know loads of people love Queen. You know, I'm not a fan, but like, you know, it's all right. Like, they're not one of the biggest bands ever for no reason. Do you know what I mean? And I'm sure a greatest hits is going to be loaded with.
You just like to be different and cool, don't you?
Oh, do you know what? I just don't know. I do like a couple of Queen songs. I like Who Wants to Live Forever. And yeah.
That's not on there, by the way.
No.
I think that came out after the greatest hits, because that was the Highlander.
That's right, yeah. Oh, and I like Under Pressure. That's got to be on there, right? Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, that's a banger. Right, okay. Lovell, what have you got in your collection that many people may think a little bit uncool, but you don't care?
Billy Joel's Greatest Hits.
Nothing wrong with that, mate.
Fucking love.
Sorry, mate, you don't get away with that. That is cool.
I fucking love Billy Joel. I absolutely love him. And it's, because you shouldn't ever have any guilty pleasures, I don't think, as far as music's concerned, but that's one I often sort of hide away a bit, and then I admit it every now and then. But I'm proud to, I love it. I think he's great.
He's got some,
he's fucking ugly bastard, mind.
Like, can't have that against him.
That's put me off a bit.
He can't be that bad. He was married to Christine Brinkley.
I was going to say, he didn't suffer in the ladies' department.
Have you seen their daughters?
No.
They've got two daughters. One of them looks just like her, and the other one looks just like him. Imagine it.
Okay.
That's a song in itself.
Sean, what have you got in your collection, mate, apart from the Spice Girls?
Well, my mind just keeps going back to the new metal era, so pretty much take your pick from there, really. Yeah. But let's just go. I'll go for Papa Roach because I've got the album signed. So I don't know if that makes it more cool or less cool. I don't know.
I mean, surely at the time you must have been very pleased with that.
Yeah. Well, I actually won a competition in Kerrang to go and interview them, and there was like a whole 6-page spread in the middle and stuff, and we went to their hotel room study, and they were just in there, and they had like a TV on, and they were just watching Papa Roach videos, so we all just sat around and had a chat.
Papa Roach was sitting there watching Papa Roach videos.
Yeah I don't know if it was for our benefit or if it was just, that's just what they do. But
I mean, that's incredible. I've got to be honest, I had, is a guitarist named Jerry?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I listened to it. Yeah, Jerry Horton.
Yeah, he did not want to do this podcast.
Did he not?
He was one of the ones, I don't know why I'm saying this out loud, but he was one of the ones that I don't think was particularly interested in doing it. He was hard work. And I've been really lucky. Everybody's been great. But if I have to think of ones that I remember thinking...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You don't really want to be here. That was definitely one of them.
Interesting. I seem to remember it not. That didn't come across on the show.
Good.
I don't think
that's so. Good.
Not as much as the geezer from Soul Asylum. That was a struggle.
Anyone else want to shout out a guest that thought was a bit fucking off? I think Dave Pienaar had just woke up and Jesus Christ, I remember thinking about halfway through, come on, mate, give me a lot to play with here. But okay, Stephen, what's in your collection that many people may think is a little bit uncool, but you don't care?
Transvision Vamp. One of my favourite bands. Love it, love it, love it. Pop Art and Velveteen, absolutely amazing.
Oh, mate, I mean, that's, you know, there's some, I mean, it's weird, isn't it, that they've kind of almost been sort of forgotten, really, and they were fucking huge, weren't they? And, like, you know, and Wendy James was just the hottest, coolest, you know, most sort of aggy, interesting pop star that was about at that time. I think, you know, she was so exciting and interesting. And am I right in saying that some of that band become Bush with Rosdale? I think some
one of them did, but I'm not 100% sure. Really.
Yeah, I definitely think someone
that's sort of been somewhere in the back of my head.
Yeah.
I think it was one of these things of she was just too mouthy, sort of, in a different way from Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah.
But it was at the same sort of time, mouthy sort of female that was just the press got on top of and sort of worried them as a result of it.
Did you have her on, Stu?
Yeah, over lockdown. And
I thought Velveteen, the song, was an incredible track itself.
They released a track, I don't know how many albums later, I think it was called If Looks Could Kill. And so good. It was such a... And the video was so cool. It had like lots of kind of sort of voodoo stuff going on in it. It was really cool. And yeah, I mean, as a, I suppose at the time, a 15-year-old lad, you know, liking kind of stuff that wasn't super shiny pop, Wendy James ticked a lot of boxes for a 15-year-old boy at that point. 100%. You know, very rarely was I buying Smash Hits for a poster, but if there was a Wendy James one, I was spending me quid.
And my arm would be like Sean's as well.
Well, that was that arm watching. Sean's arm's in a sling. He's ruined his wrist. Who's yet to answer this question? Have I been around everyone so far? I think I have. Okay, right. Next questions. Before we get on to, I'm going to ask you, we've got two more questions, and the last question I'm going to ask is what you regard as as the greatest ever album. So make sure you've got that one in your back pocket ready to go. But before that, And I guess this could cross over, but, you know, for the purposes of the podcast, maybe don't go for the greatest album ever made. The album that you think you've listened to, oh, just quickly, I'm not going to get into that yet. The album that's seen as uncool, that I absolutely love, I'm going to throw Hearsay by Alexander O'Neill. Kind of 1987 Jam and Lewis pop production, I guess, and contains the singles Criticized, I guess most people know him for, and Fake and High and Low. It was also my first ever concert, bar the Mac Lads. And yeah, I absolutely love the album. To this day, if I listen to the Hearsay record by Alexander O'Neill, which I do quite regular, there's lots of things on that record that aren't very good at all, but I love it because it just takes you to a certain point in your life, and it's makes me happy. Anyway, that was my one, to throw that in before we move on. The album that you think you've listened to the most, and I guess this could be time sensitive, couldn't it? Because I guess some albums that you've had for 20 years, you probably listen to more than albums that you've had for 10 years. But I'll start with Brett Carter. The album that you think you've listened to the most.
That's a good one. Apart from Elvis's Christmas album. I think I'm going to go Stigma by EMF.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's so different to their first album, and it's such a change. And it's amazing. I mean, at first, when I first heard it, I was like, I don't like this. Now I think this is the best thing they've ever done. It's amazing. Yeah. It's so different and so of its time and so of when I was 19, 20. And yeah, it's one of those things when you think, you just go back to it every now and again, yeah. And go, I love this. This is great. This reminds me of that point in my life when everything was cool. It was birds and skateboarding, and that's all you give a monkeys about.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely fucked up my A-levels, but hey, you know.
Yeah. I completely fucked up my hair. I know that, trying to literally backcomb my hair into dreadlocks because I wanted to look like James.
Yeah.
yeah.
Absolutely.
Was the lead single They're Here?
Yes. I mean,
I've got a Top of the Pops on VHS, and it was, they were on it. I'm trying to think who else was on it. It was a really good episode. There was, I think, Carter were on it, and maybe... Maybe the Stuffies were on there doing the Modern Idiot. It Happened to Me, Could Happen to Any. Oh, I can't think what that track was called. Against On the Ropes, I think the EP was called. But I remember it was because we'd seen all of these kind of like young, fresh faced, like kind of pop kids in baseball caps in EMF, like backwards. And all of a sudden, they kind of just got the coolest skate clothes on. They've all got dreads. And it sounded fuller and darker. And There Here is a fucking cracking single. It's huge sounding, isn't it? And like, I don't know who, it almost sounds like sort of Floods produced it or something. It sounds so big, and the electronics they pop on it. It's a cracking record. And I remember like literally looking at them then and just thinking, I just want to be in that band. They're the coolest lads on the planet because they were all super good-looking lads, weren't they? And like, and they just looked cool as fuck. And yeah, and then they come out with that track, and it was like, oh man, they've upped their game. Like, for me, it was like, you're no longer filing them next to Jesus Jones. For me, it kind of just went somewhere better for me.
Like, absolutely.
Great shout. Cy Newby, what album have you listened to the most?
I'm not sure, but certainly recently, last couple of years, Making Movies, Dire Straits. Certainly the first side. Tunnel of Love, Romeo and Juliet, Into Skateaway. I think that's the absolute peak of Mark Knopfler's songwriting. Everyone knows him for his guitar, but his lyrics are just something else.
Yeah.
Are you My Dad's Car? Because that's basically what was on there all the time.
Well, I've said about, you know, hearing stuff when we were driving, because when my dad's racing, we were always travelling in the van for a few hours somewhere. And it was always Brothers in Arms, Dire Straits, Eagles and Fleetwood Mac. But as I've got older, I've started going into other stuff. And yeah, making movies for me is just, certainly that first side is, for me, the perfect, just perfect songs.
What was the live album? It was Love Over Gold.
Alchemy.
Alchemy, that's the one.
Yeah. Alchemy's the live with the best version of Sultan's the Swing ever.
Yep.
Yeah. Love Over Gold is beautiful.
Childhood.
Yeah. I love Love Over Gold, and I think the song's amazing, and Telegraph Road is a masterpiece. But as an album, I think it's Making Movies.
Fantastic.
Told you I was middle of the road.
Stephen, album that you've listened to the most?
I'll say my second one, because the first one's absolutely, and I've already mentioned that. It'd be Pubic Fruit Curve, the compilation of the first three EPs with the extended version of Fait Accompli. So it's just a fucking belter the whole way through. And it stopped me having to change the EPs constantly. You could just listen to it. 13 songs. Brilliant. I mean, every single one.
We just mentioned huge Flood production. I mean, Fait Accompli, I believe, was Flood, wasn't it? And
most of the stuff was Alan Moulder and Flood.
Yeah, yeah. Am I right? Is Tony Halliday married to Flood?
Alan Moulder.
Moulder, yeah. Alan Moulder. Yeah, of course. Like, but yeah, I mean, it's really weird, like, because apparently, like, she's just. You know, I watched an old Top of the Pops last weekend, one of the ones they put on the Friday night. She was on there singing Original with Left Field.
Original.
And, oh, my God, I mean, I think as I grew older and maybe moved on from Tony Halliday, from Wendy James, Tony Halliday then just went, I don't mind stepping in here. I've got this.
That was basically my pattern as well. So.
yeah, I mean,
the coasters changed from Wendy James to Tony Halliday.
Absolutely, and that, you know, that Fait Accompli, what a track, and I remember seeing that on a chart show, and then the next single was Horrorhead after that, and thinking, I'm buying this, I'm getting into this band, because I think before that it was a bit more sort of shoegazy and a bit sort of less electronic, I think. And
I mean, 10 Little Girls is fucking the bee's knees, and then Blindfold as well. That's the more shoegazy sort of,
yeah,
all of it that really got in there.
Yeah, fantastic. Sean, record that you've listened to the most?
I think it's probably going to be An Outcome the Wolves by Rancid.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and most of the bulk of that listening was done at college. But yes, one I regularly go back to. I'm looking at a poster for it right now. So.
Yeah. Have you been a sort of fan of, you know, all these subsequent sort of works and side projects and such?
Yeah. Obviously not as much as Rancid, but yeah, I was into Transplants and Old Firm Casuals, Lars and the Bastards and stuff. Yeah, kind of followed it all, really.
Nice. It's I kind of remember when Time Bomb come out and I'm playing it in the clubs, and then I never really dug a lot deeper. And it's weird because I know that sort of Steve's generation, sitting here with a Steve's generation of, and Pip, Scroob was obsessed. That was one of his favourite bands growing up. And Chris, who I do our college, they all loved Rancid. And I think maybe I was just a couple of years older, and I don't know if it was just the generation, maybe a few years younger than me, that it just fell right for.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm probably two or three years younger than Chris and Pip. But it's the same. Rancid and NoFX, they were like the big two at the time. And I kind of feel like, yeah, like you're saying, if you were at the right age in that time, I think people were obsessed with them and still kind of are, but their reach kind of didn't really go outside that, I don't think.
A few years back, I had the comedian Marcus Bergman round, and And I think me and Rich Wilson, I don't know if we put it as an episode on air or we might just put it out as a bonus thing, but we sat in the little room behind here and just got pissed and played some records. And Marcus was playing me, it's Tim, and it's called Something Tim. And it was almost like a kind of acoustic kind of...
Tim Time Bomb.
Is that what it was called? And yeah, it was almost like a little bit scary, a little bit reggae, kind of a little bit sort of bluegrass. It was a bit of everything, but it was really stripped down. Like, I thought it was really good.
That I don't know if you can see the guitar in the back on the wall. That's a Tim Armstrong signature acoustic.
Oh, really?
So he did a solo album with a ska band called the Agrolites a few years ago. And now his solo stuff at the moment is under Tim Time Bomb.
Yeah. I totally love the Agrolites. They are amazing.
Yeah, they are great.
Seen them live?
Don't think so, no.
That's one of hell of a party, tell you. Ever come to London, they're amazing. Anyway, I'll be...
Wonderful. Great chat. Lovell, what album have you listened to the most?
I think mine's probably Beat Songs by the Blue Aeroplanes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'd definitely say that outnumbers anything else. That or The Innocence Erasure.
Yeah.
Because I used to listen to it on the way to school, or no, maybe it was the circus actually, but yeah, on the way to school every day and back on the Walkman. So hours of that. But no, Beat Songs.
I hadn't factored Erasure into that question. Innocence is the one as well.
A hell of a lot of times.
Yeah, that's a cracking album, that is. I was looking at them the other day, and I think from... Because it was Wonderland, Circus,
yeah.
Innocence, Wild, and then
Chorus.
And I
Chorus
think,
was the last one I listened to, really.
And you look at bands, same. And you look at bands and our regular records out. I think Wonderland come out in 85. And I think Chorus come out in maybe 90. They released an album, pretty much a number one album, every year. I mean, that's pretty special, isn't it?
I forget how massive they were.
Yeah.
They were huge.
I saw them at Milton Keynes Bowl.
Yeah, I did as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I always think back to, that they were... That was huge, Milton Keynes Bowl.
Do you remember who supported?
Adamski.
Yeah.
Was.
Yep.
Electribe 101.
Correct.
Yeah.
That was it. I loved Was Not Was as well. So
yeah,
I thought
they were brilliant.
I remember Adamski walked out on stage in Milton Keynes and he had like big yellow hair at the time.
That's right,
He just walked out and he just went, "Hello, Legoland."
I forgot that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Good chat. Who's yet to answer this one? Or have we been round? Steve, album you listen to the most, mate?
Well, apart from 3 Feet High and Rising, because that'll be the answer to pretty much everything.
Yeah,
it'll either be two greatest hits, funnily enough, probably arguably two of the greatest hits ever made. One is Carry On Up the Charts by The Beautiful South, and the other one is If the Beatles Had Red Hunter by The Wonder Stuff.
Oh, yeah. That, I mean, let's dig deep in them, because I think that Wonder Stuff greatest hits is...
It's gold. Pure gold.
There's not a duffer on there. Every single song, you just think, why is this band not revered as being like Miles Hunt's songwriting? He's fucking incredible. His voice is incredible. Like, I fucking love that band anyway. And but even like,
I mean,
you know,
the version of Dizzy with Vic was aside. That's a bit.
But you know,
everything else is just solid gold for me.
And God, yeah. Like, when you think of them, like, God, give me more, and Who Wants to Be the Disco King, Unbearable, and, like, that's before you get to, like, I wish away, fucking hell, how good's that? Before you even get to the hits, before you get to when they're having big hits with Quit My Shadow, Size of a Car, Welcome to the Cheap Seats, and, like, and that album...
On the Ropes is probably in my top 10 songs of all time.
It's so good. It's so good. Like, oh my God, yeah. I was well starstruck when I had Miles Hunt on here. What a band.
How do you deal with that? Because some of the people you speak to are just be a jubbling mess, I think. I know you've probably done it hundreds of times, so you're used to it by now, but still.
I'll get overexcited wanting to ask them about records. And so, like, and then most people that are in bands like talking about records. So it's always really easy in the end. And I thought he was going to be a bit spiky because in the 90s he was. But he was bloody lovely. And Carry On Up the Charts by The Beautiful South. I think there was a stat or something that one in three households in the UK owned that at some point, which is ridiculous. And I mean, we talk
again,
about
pure, like, the songwriters, just unreal, absolutely unreal.
You look at, you know, I said that Miles Hunt's got a good voice. Paul Heaton, like, that's different level. That's different level.
What a gent as well.
Oh, what a pop star. That's what you want your pop stars to be like. Have any of you watched the Paul Heaton documentary that came out about 4 years ago? I think it's on YouTube. It's fucking amazing. If you ever want to look at a pop star that just gets it right, you know, because he was a house Martin, you know, he was in this super fucking great band and then goes from there and then just the songwriting, in my opinion, like, and as much as I love the House Martins, when he got to The Beautiful South, he just nailed it. And, you know, even like the early singles, like, you know, A Little Time and Let Love Speak Up Itself. Fucking hell. What was the first one? Jennifer, Allison, Song for Whoever. And yeah. I'll Sound the Ship Alone. Like, oh my God. But Hold to Heat and Grad, that's the name of the documentary. Yeah, thank you. But Let Love Speak Up Itself, for me, is where he just... Oh, I think that's as close to perfect as you get that record. I think his lyrics to that are fucking phenomenal. And I remember I read a book about The Beautiful South, and when he... I can't think what track it is, but there's a line in it where he says, back to bed, back to reality. It's one of the sort of mid-career singles. Is it We Are Each Other? I can't think.
Is it my Book?
My Book. And
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And he says back to bed, back to reality. Jazzy B from Soul to Soul tried to sue him. I remember reading this quote, and he went, he said that they're not, you know, there's no soul in that band. And Paul Heaton said, I've got more soul in my little finger than you've got in your body. And I just think, and then about two nights later, he was on the TV show Rapido. And he was there with this gospel choir, and he sung a cover of Lean On Me, Paul Heaton, and he outsung the choir. He just unloaded, and his voice, oh my God. And then you just think, you have got more soul in your little finger than Jazzy B, because you have just... Oh,
okay, guys. He's one of those people as well who doesn't sound like he looks. He looks like a bloke, just a bloke down the pub.
Yeah, well, he was like a bloke down the pub. He done that really well. He'd done that really well. And that documentary says he had to stop doing that because he got a bit too good at that. But yeah, he does. He just looks like, he is the bloke that's down the pub and he is the bloke that's at football on a Saturday. But then he'll just break your heart with his lyrics and these beautiful pop songs. Yeah, great shout. Great shout on the stuff he's in and the beautiful South. Okay, what we got? Are we albums that we've listened to the most? Has everybody gone yet? Are we done? Yep. Okay. I'll probably throw mine in as Alexander O'Neill is probably up there. But I think I'll probably go with Songs of Faith and Devotion, I think, by Depeche Mode. I think that's the album that I've listened to the most. And I've rinsed that a hell of a lot. Okay, I'm going to start with you, Mr. Lovell. Greatest album ever recorded in your humble?
That's probably one of the hardest questions, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll take it till last, mate.
I hadn't even thought about it either. I forgot you said about it earlier. one of the greatest albums ever recorded. I think it'd have to be something like either The Wall by Pink Floyd or The Joshua Tree.
Two solid shouts there, mate.
And they're not necessarily amazing. I think they're albums that everyone should listen to. I think that school kids should listen to both of those albums for songwriting, and it's just something beautiful about both albums, I think. And I'm yeah. U2, I'm like that. I love the Joshua Tree U2. I'm not a massive fan, but I just think it's an incredible album. I think it's.
I'm in full agreement with you there, mate.
And The Wall, to me, I think every teenager should listen to The Wall in one of their lessons and watch it and learn how to be a better person. And I think it's a really, really important album. And more so nowadays than ever, I think. But without getting political.
Sorry, newbie. What you got? Greatest album ever recorded, my friend.
I was going to go Dark Side of the Moon, but then I was having to think about it. I think it's Rumours. Fleetwood Mac.
Okay.
It is just incredible. What was going on in the band that fueled the songwriting, that fueled the venom that they sing with. And every song on there.
Can't argue with that.
Or Dark Side of the Moon.
Stephen, what you got for me? Greatest album ever recorded.
Well, it's a different topic from what I'm prepared for. So it's not the album that I was going to discuss as the essential album, but greatest album, probably would say Dark Side of the Moon. Probably okay. Have to agree with that.
Okay. This is interesting. We've kind of gone quite heavy on the kind of classic albums here.
I will, just to jump in as well, not that re-recording of Dark Side of the Moon, because that is Bobbins. Sorry, as much as I love him, that is unlistenable shit.
I take it, I don't know much about it. Has Roger Waters done it?
It's like he's regressed into being a 17-year-old art student trying to do some avant-garde to what is one of the best albums ever made.
He's quite famously a bit of a...
And it hurts me to say that.
Isn't he?
Yeah, it does hurt me to say it. And Cy Lovell put me onto it. I did try it. I gave it a full listen. And no, I'm sorry.
I apologise because I hadn't listened to all of it. And I actually thought that a lot of it was from... He did a lockdown sessions. And I thought most of it was from the lockdown sessions, which are absolutely incredible. Which you can get and listen to. But no, I'm with you, Cy, on that. The new Dark Side of the Moon. It was...
It's Redux, it's called, isn't it?
There's a couple of... Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah, and there is a couple of tracks I do really like, some of it's nice, but yeah, don't... And I love him. He's my favourite part of Pink Floyd, but yeah. Now he can shove that up his ass.
Okay. Sean, Your favourite ever record?
Like most people, my answer probably changes day to day. I was thinking The Wall, like I said earlier, but at the moment I'm struggling to look past The Specials' first album.
Oh, great. Great show. Great show. It's weird, isn't it, that, you know, when asked about, you know, greatest records ever made, people regress, don't they? And, you know, people aren't going, oh, the new record by blah, blah, blah is the greatest record ever made. It's so weird that you have this kind of little sort of box in your head of these records that are in there, because there's three in mind that are constantly on rotation, and they're all fucking years old. Okay. Steve Priest. You're not allowed to say 3 Feet Iron Rising, so that's the answer to anything I've ever asked you ever.
Before I show you, because I've got it here,
okay.
There's a band called The Sword, and they did, I mean, I'm not a massive Pink Floyd fan at all, but they did a Doom cover version, like covers album of Dark Side of the Moon called Doom Side of the Moon. If you like it, it might be worth checking out. It might, you might like something of it. But I mean, I've got it here, but I couldn't dig it out because I couldn't find it. But for me, as you put us on the spot, Stu, it is going to be
Abba Gold.
Oh,
Abba Gold. Wash your mouth out with soap, young man.
Tell us what it is, Steve.
It's Murmur by REM, sorry.
Oh, what a record. What a record.
The first REM album.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
my favourite one.
Yeah. It's, I think after hearing, I would have put him in about maybe 16 when I heard Green. And I remember thinking, oh, I liked Orange Crush, and I hadn't really listened to it properly. And it was only through Out of Time and then becoming obsessed with that band that I saw this little documentary, and at the beginning they played just the opening bars of Perfect Circle, and I was like, holy shit, what is this? And like, and then went back and bought the full back and yeah, it's fucking great, isn't it?
That's an essential album. Yep. Stu.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah,
it really is a true essential album. That
more essential for me than that, than Automatic for the People.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Automatic for the People for me has been spoiled just purely because the songs got played just so much.
Yeah.
I get that they were, you know, at that point, that was probably, you know, the peak of their powers.
Oh, yeah. I think it's safe to say that they're probably the biggest band on the planet at that point.
People find it hilarious that REM are my favourite band of all time when, you know, you tell people what you listen to on the main.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, what's your favourite band? And you go, oh, REM. And they're like, what?
Yeah. They're my favourite band, mate. And well, you know that because all of them songs from All Man for the People, I would have fucking forced down your ear rolls every week at the club. That's probably got a bit to blame for that, mate. Yeah, like, and it, what I love is Harry's voice is quite raw there, but there's so much beauty in it. And I think as they've matured as a band, and all of them matured incredibly, and Stipe's voice just become something that's so underrated. When people talk about some of the greatest vocalists ever, I'm telling you, Michael Stipe is up there. He really is. And I think that he never gets credited as having this, you know, this great voice. It's so unique. It's so perfect for what they've done. Yeah. Oh, phenomenal. Great show. Great show.
I seem to like the albums that people don't really like either, because for me, it was either that or Monster. I love Monster. Love Monster.
It's not one of my faves. I like Let Me In. I really like Let Me In.
Because that was about Kurt Cobain, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And I just love that. That's just racket. And yeah, that's really good. But I struggled with your Bang and Blames, and I didn't like and I didn't like Crush with Eyeliner. I struggled with that because that was Thurston Moore on guitar there as well, wasn't it? On Crush with Eyeliner. But yeah, I remember I've been obsessed with that band, and when Monster dropped. And it's really weird because it is like a kind of bastard offspring of everybody else. But I do think Strange Currencies is a beautiful record. It's lovely. But for me,
everybody else can get in C, mate. Really.
I think it's... I haven't heard it for ages. And the only time I hear it now is when I'm watching reruns of The American Office and Dwight locks himself in his car just blaring it out on repeat. That's the only time I hear it now. Which is always a good time. All right. Okay. Who's left? Brett hasn't gone yet, but he's back. He's back. Brett?
I've got a couple of special mentions, but we'll probably leave those till the end.
Okay.
Sean mentioned the specials of specials. One Step Beyond came out on the same day, and that's also brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I think is essential is A Nation of Millions by Public Enemy. It just captures that time, and Chuck D in that is just amazing. Yeah. And as a white kid from Sussex, and you going, wow, I can understand and I can appreciate the shit you're going through. It's fucking fantastic.
It was as exciting for me hearing that as I'm sure it was for working class kids hearing the Pistols or the Clash in 77. It was
absolutely
it was so exciting. It was from another world. It was like,
yeah,
what is this stuff that just sounds different to anything I've ever heard before? And you mentioned earlier, Steve Priest, do I ever get nervous asking people? Never, really. When Chuck D turned up on my computer screen and was talking to me, I was in awe, and I was literally, my knees were shaking. It was the only time I was ever thinking, because he don't suffer fools, and I was thinking, like, I've got to be on my A game here, because I'm talking to Chuck D, and it was trying rein in the fanboy and not just say something daft. And he was super nice as well. Fucking great shout there, Brett.
Not to get too political, but isn't it sad that everything that he was talking about in that record still hasn't changed?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. And okay, has everybody done their greatest album? Okay, right. I'm going to throw mine in there, and I think I'm going to go, it's always between three that are on rotation, and they're all kind of granddad records. And it's either Astral Weeks, Pet Sounds, but I will always kind of just find that the one record that I never get bored of, whatever mood, is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. And that record just hits the spot every time for me. I just think it's got so much depth. It's a concept record. It's got fantastic like pop gems on it, like Mercy, Mercy Me, and obviously What's Going On. And his voice, the band, the production, it's just fucking perfect. And in whatever mood, it just absolutely nails it.
And the message as well, Stu.
Oh, my God, yeah, massively.
There's another one that hasn't changed.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And it's an absolute banger. Okay, great albums that are never far from your turntable. Let's throw some out randomly. What you got for us, fellas?
Rage Against the Machine. I think that's up there on the essential albums. It's not my favourite album at all. It's not a great album. I just think it's an essential one.
Yeah.
Especially as we're talking about messages and
records that don't date, like that hasn't dated. That record still, I play that now at the club, and it gets the same response as it got when I played it when it came out. And that's been out a long time now. That record, that's probably 30 years old, and it sounds fucking incendiary when you play it now. And I was chatting when I had the guy from Taking Back Sunday on the other day. We was talking about intros, and we was talking about Rage, and you know how they knew an intro, whether it was Killing in the Name, Bomb Track, Bullet in the Head. And I was like, dude, Sleep Now in the Fire. As soon as you hear that, and the fucking snare drums on that, it's, oh, mate, yeah, Rage. What a debut record as well. Great shout. What else we got, fellas?
Same era, never mind.
Oh.
Yeah, it's one off my list.
Yeah.
I've got like a bingo list here. Go through.
I mean, again, if you look at a record that hasn't got a bad record on, like, there's no bad tracks on that. Everything is consistent. But anything on that album, and there's not many records that you can say have got that, and I've probably said this before on an episode or so. As a DJ then, when that come out, I'm sure, Sean, that was in your dad's record collection, but I had it when it came out, mate. And you could literally drop the needle on any track in a club and it would go off. I think maybe it's Something in the Way, or Never Mind It Is, isn't it? Mm. That's maybe the only one that, because you could play Territorial Pissings, Drain You, Stay Away, you know, without the singles, you know, the singles were obviously just huge, but you drop Stay Away, Drain You. I mean, it's arguably one of the greatest intros ever.
Like, yeah, that's my favourite Nirvana song.
Oh, what a... The version that they that read in of that when they played, fuck yeah. Me. Like, and yeah, and that little mid-eight with the spray can where he sprays that into the mic. Oh, fucking hell, what a track. What a track. Great shout, Sean. Who else wants to throw some in? Stephen, what you got, mate?
The Holy Bible, Manic Street Preachers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my sort of thing. It came to mind because we talked about doing songwriters, and I was like, I've got no idea who would pick for that. And then I was like, actually, that's kind of it. One half of the band doing the words, one half doing the music. And that was the sort of the culmination of them at their most sort of spiky, confrontational, definitely, in your face. And then with what happened with Richie, they've completely changed, understandably, direction, lyrically, musically, everything all sort of changed. I mean, Everything Must Go after it was such a good album for following on, but musically it completely changed. And you just wonder what it would have been like if what happened didn't happen.
Yeah,
the Journal for Plague Lovers that they brought out later on that used Richie's lyrics, if that had been the sort of Holy Bible 2, I wonder if they'd have stayed the same sort of musical sort of stuff.
I don't know how that done commercially, because I mean, I remember, like, obviously when they come out, the furore around the Manics and you know, the things that Nicky would say, notably about Michael Stipe, mm-hmm, as well, like, was such, you know, fodder for the Enemy and the Melody Maker to get their teeth into how exciting this band was, you know. And then obviously Richie does the For Real thing on the arm, and it was like, you know, it just creates so much excitement and interest around this band that had a singer that had a voice that was so good, and they just had great, you know, that Generation Tourists, like, that is just chock-up with fantastic pop singles, you know. And you know, whether that be Slash and Burn or Love Sweet XO or Little Baby Nothing, all of them singles were so good. And then all of a sudden, he's on Top of the Pops wearing a balaclava, and the pop hits seem to have disappeared. And they, like you say, they just become real agitators, and it was spiky as fuck. And you know, was She Suffering on the Holy Bible?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just fucking great records. And yeah, that's so interesting to think that, had, you know, Richie not disappeared, like, what would have come next? That's I've never really sort of considered that, because obviously they've gone away and listened to, you know, James must have been listening to the Ronettes and Spectre and gone, right, okay, we're going to make this huge, you know, production now. And you know, it was commercially huge, and it's a fantastic record, you know.
Yeah. Those two different sides of them. But
yeah,
both amazing.
Yeah, massively. Interesting to see that they've just announced the tour with Suede in the UK. Suede, that's a night that's going to be heavy on tiaras and feather boas, mate. Both bands are fans are not, you know, afraid of wearing them. So that's a great night out, and it's Suede and the Manics on the same bill. That's
I was going to say, coming up as another mention.
Yeah. Yeah,
what? I was going to say, I saw the Manics at Reading, probably, I think it was 92. correct me on this, and that was the one where they finished the set and he lobbed his guitar into the crowd and it hit this girl about 10 metres away from where we were. And we didn't think anything of it, but reading in the NME the next week, apparently it fucked her up quite a bit and they legged it and didn't even get their money. How much of that is true, I don't know, but that's what I've been led to believe.
There's a great, I think it's Nicky Wire's on Adam Buxton's podcast ages ago, and he basically says, did you say this or did you not, going to Nicky Wire? Because he famously say, like, what was the slow dive comment? Like, it was something really fucking offensive, and like giving slow dive an hiding. Yeah, some of the things he'd said, just like, fuck me. And like, even he was embarrassed. He was like, God, yeah, I did say that. Like, it's that's a good listen, like Nicky Wire on Buxton's podcast. I definitely recommend that. Okay. Other albums that people want to shout out? Cy Lovell, yep. What you got?
Madman Across the Water by Elton John.
Yeah.
It's my favourite Elton John album by a long shot. I don't like any of his mod,
isn't it?
Yeah, and then leave on. But there's a track on there called Indian Sunset, which I think is one of the greatest songs ever written. It's incredible. And the sound is huge.
Yeah.
If you can get it in a good room with some good speakers, and it's pretty epic. The whole album, I think it's incredible. And I like his early stuff.
I don't think that was a big commercial hit, that one. I think, like, no. At that point, I think that was kind of, he wasn't sort of setting the world on fire. And no. Like you say, like, I went and checked that out when I heard Almost Famous, when I saw Almost Famous and heard Tiny Dancer for the first time. I was like, oh my God, what is this Elton John song I've never heard? And
I was gutted when that was on there because it was my favourite song ever. And then suddenly it was everywhere. So, yeah, I hate that.
That film also introduced me to Mona Lisa and Mad Hatters as well, which is one of my other favourite Elton John songs. It's a fucking great film, man. It's a great film.
Yeah, I love it. I like him, the main actor. He's cool.
Jason Lee. Oh, no, yeah. Billy Crudup. No.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
He's
a handsome man, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is it Almost Jesus? Is that the other one he's in? Is it called Almost Jesus? No, that he was in another film just after or just before.
Oh, right.
I think it is called Almost Jesus. It's an amazing film. And he's properly cool in it. Yeah, I've gotten both of them.
He's an absolute dude.
He's a handsome man, isn't he?
He is a handsome one. Fellas, any more we're going to shout out before we start the wrap?
Just one quickly. I was chatting to Katie earlier and asked hers. And this might surprise you because it's not one of the pop ones. It's Gaslight Anthem, 59 Sound.
Oh, a little heads up here, fellas. Has anyone else?
No, you haven't.
Crackle in their head.
There's I'm going
to. I don't know what it is, but there's something. Yeah, I can't work it out.
I hope it's not me.
It's him.
I assumed it was me, so I stopped breathing for a while, and it carried on.
Ooh.
But yeah, Gaslight. I've seen them. They're one of Katie's favourite bands. Yes.
And
they've been announced as they're the first headliner to be announced at 2000 Trees next year.
Fantastic. Psych, newbie, can you just hit your mute a sec just to see if that is you? Yeah, I think it is. Like, it is, yeah. Well,
a couple more.
I would just shout out as well. You mentioned Gaslight Anthem. I'm just in discussions now about having Brian Fallon on. So fingers crossed that comes good.
I'd get a bit excited over that one, Stu, to be honest.
Yeah. Again, I'd be nervous.
I love his voice. I love him.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it?
I actually met him at the Springsteen at Hyde Park.
Oh, really?
It's actually on my birthday, on my 35th birthday, I think. And they supported, and he walked through the crowd. The whole band walked past us where we were sat and stopped and chatted to him for just a couple of minutes. But he was so handsome. He even smelt nice. It's not like rum and toughness and sexy stuff.
Rum and toughness. That's got to be a great name for an album.
Yeah.
That's a Pogues album, isn't it?
anyone else got a few more? What you got, yep. Brett?
Got
a couple of special mentions. I'm going to go for Ronnie Size Represent, because that was of that genre. That's the one to have. Showing My Age, it's Stone Roses, Stone Roses. Mm. Screamadelica, but also Live at Folsom Prison by Johnny Cash is amazing. Yeah.
Solid chat. Wonderful. Are we all done, gents? Or does anybody want to?
I had a few quick ones, mate.
Go on, mate. What you got, buddy?
Container Ships by Kowloon Wall City. It's amazing. Got The Opposite of December by Poison the Well. If you like a bit of metalcore, that's probably one of the archetypal albums from the genre. Botch, if you like a bit of crazy mathcore type stuff, it's an amazing album. And they've just reformed and done a tour over here. Star by Belly.
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, good. There's the first press, and there's the 30th anniversary press.
Fantastic.
And also, last one, sorry, mate. Iron Sheik 3, bit of a pop punk glory.
Wonderful. Well, lads, if I can take anything from this conversation this evening, it's Wendy James, Tony Halliday, and now Tanya Donnelly from Belly is now at the forefront of my mind. So thanks for reminding me of the crushes throughout my years of being a fan of music. Lads, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's always lovely catching up with you and talking records. Other patrons, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this. We'd love to see you in the next one, and I will put a shout out on Patreon what we're going to choose for a discussion topic next time. There'll be many more episodes that I've recorded. I've got probably 25 episodes recorded now that will be coming your way over the coming months, and thanks ever so much for supporting the podcast and becoming patrons and you people here tonight, just being nice people and coming on and chatting records. I love doing this, and I hope you've all had a good time. I'm going to press stop, but don't go anywhere.